folks, welcome to another episode of the Wrench Turners Podcast, a show that's about improving the life, well-being of, well, everyone for that matter, but of mechanics mostly across the globes. Now, we have a very special guest with us tonight. I would say that if I didn't grow up with a mama, I would call her mama and be very, very happy to do so, because even now, after only about 2 years of getting to know this wonderful woman, I would trust her with my life, with my family's life. I'm happy to say that she holds me accountable in things that I need to be held accountable in now. Even as a 40-year-old man, I need to be checked. So she does this very well, very politely, and sometimes not so politely when necessary. So without further ado, we have Wendy Reeves. Thank you very, very much for taking the time this evening and spending a little time with us.
It's such an honor to be here. And it's funny about the mama thing, because I think I told you this, that about when I first started with overseas agents back in 2018, I don't know why they nicknamed me Mama Shark. And it sounds kind of weird because it's BDC Angels, the name of my company, but Mama Shark. And then, I don't know, I guess it's just been me all my life. I mean, I was the oldest of three daughters, and I always got it when my sisters got in trouble, and I was just the mama. So anyway, there are worse things in life, right?
There are worse things in life. And you and Kate Bierowski and Kaylee Filo, I think between the three of you, you keep the whole SDL family in check. And, you know, it came out very, very simply came out when the three of you, actually, was Kaylee there? I don't remember. My God, so long ago. Tito's and T-shirts was so long ago now. But you and Kate kept me in check then, and I feel it too, because there's like people, when you get people around you that you know are going to take care of you, it's that energy, and you can just put your shoulders down, you can relax, and you can be yourself, and you know there are certain people that you get around that immediately get you back up, and then there's people that you can relax next to, and you are definitely one of those people that I can just relax around. So I really appreciate that energy.
That's really cool. I appreciate that. And you know, I don't know if it's because there have been so many changes in automotive, and even since before COVID, when we weren't allowed to be who we are within the walls of our dealership or wherever we were or whatever work gathering, you know, everybody was on stage all the time. And I think that's one of the best things that happened out of COVID, is that we all learned how to interact. We didn't have to be placed right in front of one another, but we learned how to interact from our own personal spaces at home when we were quarantined. And we got to know that we're just all people helping people. And so it's pretty cool. Yeah, that feeling. And you know, the SDL gang, and for those of you that don't know, that's Service Drive Live. We all get together on a Zoom meeting every Sunday morning. Am I allowed to say that? I guess I just
absolutely
did.
Speak it as high and as often as we possibly can, because there's so many things that wouldn't have happened in my life in the last 2 years without SDL fam.
I know, right? And it was Tinley Park when we got together for the first get together, when a number of us met in person. And it's just like, you feel the vibe, you know, we have it all in our Zoom meetings and everything else. But then when you get that in real life, in person, I'm still thinking acronyms, the automotive industry is full of acronyms, IRL. When we get to see each other IRL, then it's just icing on the cake. And this SDL community, and I'm seeing more and more of these like sprout in automotive, and it's such a beautiful thing. Funny that my thing is good morning beautiful people, and wherever I am in a room, if I don't see that, say that on all things used cars, David waits for it. Good morning beautiful people, there it is, now we can get going, you know, it's a joke. But it's just a great thing, the SDL community, like from Sean Butler with his journey right now with cancer, with terminal cancer, and documenting his journey and sharing and the importance of being proactive, the love that our community has for him and his family, or somebody who's concerned about how a certain thing is going or isn't going at work, or somebody who wants to know how to reward, you know, members of their organizations when they hit milestones and stuff like that. It's a family, like you said. It's a family. It's a place where just the mention of any one of those people's names just completely sets me at ease. Like you said, So it's family.
So let's take this family back to the start. Let's get some context to some of these folks who have never met you before and maybe not heard your name. Wendy, what is the thing that got you into automotive? What was it, 10 years ago?
Wink, wink. When I was actually 16 years old was my first job. So those who may not know, probably you guys might not even know, my dad was a car guy. He was a drag racer. He was a bad boy. He was a drag racer growing up in Milwaukee, Wisconsin. And he got busted up with a wife and three kids under five. I was the oldest. So then he went to car sales. So he was a car guy. And I was the night receptionist at 16 at the Buick store where he was GM in Wauwatosa, Wisconsin, Frescone Buick. And it was hilarious because my very first night, I remember it already, and that, you know, the guys respected me because I was the boss's daughter, but they still messed with me. It was Milwaukee. It was automotive, you know, like calling me, asking for Jack Mehoff and Mike Hunt and more, you know.
The stuff that would never, ever ever fly today. It would so not fly today. I couldn't, like, some of the stuff we did over the PA in the shop 15 years ago, we couldn't get away with today.
Yeah, yeah. So I think my dad brought me into the dealership, honestly, because then he immediately sicked an Air Force recruiter on me. His name was Charlie Brown. I used to call him Downtown Charlie Brown. So long story short, I hid in the closet enough times. He finally got me out. I finally went in because Dad wanted him to pay for my college. I got a 97% overall on my aptitude testing. He said it was the highest score he'd ever seen in his 20-year career. So I was going to be in intelligence. Believe it or not, can you imagine me in, as a
Absolutely.
Member of the FBI or whatever? So Dad always thought that I should be a district attorney because I have I like to argue or I like to debate things, let's call it. So it all started early, Joshua. It started early. But long story short, I didn't want to be away from my family. So I started going to school to be a mechanical engineer. And then right out of college, I started at Amato Automotive Group at 18, the same day that John S. Amato started out of college. He and I both worked for his dad. And then I worked through three generations of Amatos on and off for like 30 years. And now I'm here where I am today.
Wow.
That's what started.
So what were you doing? You were at the front desk at the Amato store? That's where you started?
No. So at 16 at the Buick store, I was just night receptionist. When I came back when I was 18, I started out as a title clerk at their Oldsmobile store.
Okay.
And
so
I did everything in the back of the house.
We have not had anyone that started their career in this manner. I think this is an interesting, intriguing way that, you know, somebody's come into the front end, but they haven't actually come into the front end. Title is not what we use here in Canada. It's not the same. It's not labeled the same. It's just, it's ownership, not title. And even, you know, car loans here in Canada, it's a car loan. It's not a car note, which is interesting. It's just a subtle difference between the two. But title clerk, I don't think I've ever seen title clerk as a position here in Canada. And that's interesting. It's how it's searched. And title is kind of one of those things where it's like F&I, where it's not front of the house, really. It's not back of the house at all. It's kind of in the middle.
It's everything.
Right? It's kind of a little bit in the middle. You got to be able to talk to everybody, right? You got to be able to talk to everybody. You got to kind of one of those going on going here, going on there, so on and so forth. And so when you got, you know, so what was that first year like once you were a title clerk? What's that like? I'm just trying to, I'd love to understand the difference between, because the first year of a mechanic, first year of an apprentice, is going to be tremendously different. So I'm interested what it's like for you in an Oldsmobile store.
Well, so keep in mind, this was a small store and this was a few years back. So I was the inventory clerk. We used police books then. We didn't. We had Selectric typewriters and everything, but not a lot of stuff on the computer, except for those clunky ones where we did like all the, because I also did receivables and payables, and I was service cashier, and I did the warranty claim submission, and I ordered the office supplies, and I put in all the new inventory and took care of all the tags and all the key tags and kept the inventory. And like a guy would say, hey, what, you know, the 2020, the black Sonata or whatever. There wasn't a Sonata back then, I don't think. But whatever it was, what's the stock number? Or they'd give me the last six on a VIN, and they'd say, what car is that? And I'd say, boom. And I'd tell them mm-hmm. what car it was. So I got to do all of it, you know, and I also typed up the paperwork for the car deals and broke down the deals. I did all that. Now there's a minimum six people doing all those things in a dealership.
So and was that simply because it was a small store?
Connected. You know, well, maybe, and because it wasn't, I don't know, it was just everything was manual. Like when I did the paperwork for a car deal on the front end of the house, I used to have to type up all the paperwork with and without credit, life, and disability, especially if it was after 5 p.m. so I wouldn't have to like retype the contract mm-hmm. If they didn't want it. So everything was in duplicate, and the volume was lower, yeah. So, and then you had like a lot guy, but it was really interesting. And it got me into service as well. And this is something you made me think of. So I was thinking, okay, I know when I started in the front of the house, which really wasn't the front of the house, but where's the service connection? The service connection is because I had the Wendy you know today has always been, right? She's just been, she was just a lot more subdued then. So too many Leos pulling me in different directions. So I had a 78 Nova that my dad got me because my first car was a 67 Mustang. Then I had a 69 Cutlass Supreme. I had an orange 78 Nova that used to flood. The spark plugs.
I was born in the wrong decade.
Oh, dude, you don't even.
I was born in the wrong decade. This is not fair. You're rhyming off your car history, and I'm just sitting here in utter jealousy. Okay, keep going. Sorry, I will try not to be verbally jealous.
So it was a V8, and you know, real easy to get to the plugs. So my dad bought me an extra set of plugs and my own little socket set. So when the car would flood, then I would, you know, one of the guys would help me, and I'd push it into one of the bays after hours when the techs were gone, and I'd change my plugs, and then I'd give the other set to the, I'd be under the hood in my skirt, you know, changing my plugs in the service bay and give the guys my old set so they could sandblast them, and then I was ready for the next time. So I guess I could have, man, I missed the sign there. Maybe God was telling me to be a mechanic. Right?
On a 78 Nova. That's awesome. That's awesome. So your first year sounds an awful lot like a paper version of a first year of apprentice, because you're literally going from here to there, doing all of this and that, and all the run around. It feels kind of like what's an auctioneer's mouth would be in a whole body kind of deal. You're doing a little bit of this, a little bit of that, a little bit of this, a little bit of that, a little bit of this, and you just kind of get stuff done. And obviously, in a lower volume store, there's a lot more, you know, there's a lot fewer people to get the same amount of work done. You know, if you sell a car, you service a car, the same amount of work's going to get done. You just have fewer resources to get it done. You got to get super creative in all the process. So now you got through the first year, what is it that translated? So instead of changing plugs in your skirt and becoming a mechanic, 30 years later, you're now running a business focused on hitting the phones and in a very big way, specifically for service. Now you also do the variable side as well, but your company BDC Angels is so super focused on making sure communication happens between guests and the dealerships, and to make sure the dealerships and the guests are having the kind of experience they need, capturing leads, making sure they're, you know, getting done, so on and so forth. So what happened between being the title clerk, literally running around the dealership like a crazy person and changing plugs in your skirt, to today? What happened to translate that to this?
So it's really interesting. Basically what happened I guess I fell in love. How many years would it have been? 5 years? Actually, I met my ex, the father of my two beautiful Greek princesses, Leah and Christina. I met him the same time I started this job at Amato. And he had a nightclub that he was a Greek bad boy in Milwaukee, and he had a nightclub, and I went out with somebody with another Greek guy, whatever, got to know him, ended up staying above there. Anyway, he invited me to go home with him to Athens to visit his parents, you know, like 3 years in. And I wrangled it so I could have a 6-week vacation, went to Greece with him, decided that's where I wanted to live my forever. And actually, John Amato even said a few weeks in, he's like, Wendy, if you cut your, he said, we just let the F&I manager go. If you cut your vacation early, we'll make you the F&I manager. I think you're ready. And, well, that didn't happen because I was in Athens. I was swimming in the sea, you know. So anyway, we ended up moving there. So I retired after 5 years in. I retired. We gave away all our earthly possessions. We moved to Athens, Greece, in his patriarchal, is that the English word? Patriarchal, I think, house. And we were going to raise a family there. But then a brother got sick a year later, and we had to come back. So so that's where the zigzag went, happened. Mm-hmm. So then, even when we came back here, I didn't immediately go back. And my controller would bring me ROs, and I did CSI. Even my mom did CSI. And you know mm-hmm. what? They called her Mama Margie now that I think about it. Dang, mm-hmm. I'm turning into my mama. Oh, shoot. And it happened right here on Wrench Turner's podcast. Wendy realized she's turning into her mama. And the next day.
Oh, it happens. It happens. I realize that I'm doing the same thing. A little, the mannerisms come out. It's like, my God, I'm turning into my father. I got to be careful.
Yeah. But CSI calls then were a stack of ROs. Here, call these people, make sure they were all happy. And that's mm-hmm. what I did. They used to bring them to my house because he lived a couple miles from me when we were back in town. He used to bring me ROs to do CSI calls because he wanted to keep that string attached, you know? Mm-hmm. And then we separated end of 90s. And then, honestly, for 20 years, I just got busy, worked for a friend in for about 11, let's see, from 97 to 06. So it wasn't 20 years. It was 20 years. I mixed up mm-hmm. my thing. It was 20 years post-X before Fred. So that's mm-hmm. what the 20-year number was. But so I got a call from John Amato in 2006. And he's like, Wendy, my oldest was in high school. They were both in high school, a freshman and a senior. He says, Wendy, I heard you, and I decided it's time to go back full time. So he says, Wendy, I heard you want to get back in the car business. What are you, nuts? And he brought me back as internet sales and internet marketing manager, where his niece was in the position, and she was moving to Chicago. And I was Cradle to Grave Internet Sales, which was then a Hyundai store, mm-hmm. for like about a year until my GM walked me in a room and said, here, make me a call center. So that nice. Was the first BDC was early 07, and we jumped right into service, so back into fixed ops.
Nice. Okay, cool. So that's and it's not like you jumped in at a good time to start. Unfortunately, by the end of 08, that would have made life a whole lot of challenges because we all went through some wonderful challenges in 2008. Different challenges than they are today, not necessarily worse, not necessarily better, but definitely a different set of gnarly challenges back in 08. I remember, you know, the general manager walking in the fall, and he goes, you know what, it's the next year is going to be real hard. It's going to be real, real hard. And of course, all the mechanics like myself looking around dumbfounded, not really understanding exactly what's going to happen. And 2 weeks later, I start getting, you know, 10-hour, 2-week paychecks. So it's starting something like that and building something like that from scratch in 07, 08 would have been a challenge. What would, if you go back to that time, what would be, you know, maybe the biggest challenge of building a service BDC?
You know, everybody was such a, they were just a family and no one else knew what they were doing. And they were very respectful of me and the work they knew me to do and the loyalty they knew I had to the store. So it was all very, we started out with legal pads and rulers and pens, you know, like date, appointment, whatever. We had Autobase as a CRM. And my, like I said, my warranties, you probably never heard of what we used to call a flex machine. But even the warranty submissions, we would plunk away on this kind of keyboard, kind of big, giant, stupid processing machine. And everything was very archaic means, but we didn't know any better. We didn't know. We just knew what we had to get, we had to do. It was about dials, setting appointments, and making sure they show. So, mm-hmm. And it was subprime, a subprime market, too. So it was really great because we also had something like something called Warranty Forever. So we had things that we would reach out to them for service. But there wasn't really a challenge. You just start where you're at, the same as I tell people now. Like we started with, you know, the guys would set appointments. We'd confirm the appointments, right, and do CSI calls. And it just kind of evolved.
Mm-hmm. Okay, cool. And now that you've evolved that, because that's 06, 07, so you're 13, you're 16, 17 years into building BDCs, and you've built BDCs all over the country in the America, and you build BDCs so that you can kind of set it and forget it, and you also build BDCs that you run with internal and outsourced folks, all depending on the needs of the dealer. What are some of the biggest challenges today that differentiate between back then?
Oh my goodness, that's a really, really good question. It's the same gap that we had 20 years ago, 10 years ago, the gap between sales and BDC. And so it used to be just between sales and service, right? So I don't know how much of that exists. But what happens in the BDC world now, trying to think of a way to put this into one thought. All right, rephrase that. You want to know what the challenge, biggest challenge is right now?
Yeah, just kind of what is the comparative difference between the challenges of 2007 and now in 2024? What are the two major differences?
I think there's too many hands in the BDC or in the business development pot right now. I think that in the absence of BDCs, when people sized down in COVID, they started having sales take care of the leads, and that's all well and good, but then they downsize the BDMs and they now have sales managers overseeing BDCs, which I disagreed with then and I strongly disagree even now. So some of the challenges you're having in trying to build or rebuild BDCs for effective conversion of opportunities to service drive and showroom visits, many times you have a broken culture. And I mean, I did 3 on-sites Q4 last year, one in Pennsylvania, one in Michigan, and the other was a virtual. And the very first day, the BDM was crying at the end of the day because she didn't get along with the GM. I'm not even kidding you. I mean, you can't make this shit up. Sorry, I said shit, but we talked about that, so I had to do it.
Shit, I said shit. Fuck, I said fuck. Don't worry about it.
So anyway. Listen,
we live in a world and we live in an industry where you just be yourself and it is what it is. And it's statistically proven. I think Harvard Business Review published an article that literally said if you swear, you are A, more intelligent, B, more successful, and C, more likely to earn a higher income. So not necessarily let loose with the entire propaganda, as it were, but at the same time, don't worry about it.
Okay.
And I think you made mention in there that the difference in separation might be that sales and service don't necessarily communicate well. That's always a thing. Sales and BDC don't necessarily communicate well. That's a thing. Service and BDC don't necessarily communicate well. That's a thing. The communication is always the thing. And, you know, going into stores, doing a couple of walk rounds that I've done in the last six to 12 months on some stores that have been gracious enough to me to, you know, come out and see if I can help them out in some way or another. And I've been able to help them in some way or another. Communication is the pinnacle in all of them.
Oh yeah.
When technicians come to me and say, you know, I hate where I am. My manager is awful, blah, 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 all the expletives and everything else like that. Can you help me find a new job? I see that you've got 25,000 people that follow you across platforms. And I see you talking about technicians all the time. You know, can you help me get another job? It's like, well, no, let's review you first. And many are unwilling to self-reflect on their own self and what they communicate out into the world. And I think that's true. And I understand the sentiment where you don't like to have sales managers run a BDC. And I think it's a conflict of interest because sales managers are just looking for the clothes. That's their job, right? A sales manager on the floor, they're looking for the clothes. That is their job. Their job is to help close. The challenge is in the BDC world, we're not looking necessarily to close. We're looking to build relationships and cultivate relationships, whether it's sales or service, so that we get the appointment and then we continue to follow up through communication to encourage the arrival of said guest. Because if you harass somebody on the phone and go for the close and go for the close and go for the close, they're never going to show or darken your door. So it requires a different touch. It requires a much more sensitive touch. You do need to be educated in the art of sales. I don't even know what the appropriate term is anymore, because I would have normally said salesmanship, and that's not necessarily the way to phrase it anymore. But whilst I will use it, and those who can educate me on the appropriate way to rephrase that, I would be thankful. That craft that you need to learn over time in sales still needs to be applied in BDC, but with slightly different sales. I don't even know what the right words are here. I'm grasping at straws. Vernacular, perhaps? A different vocabulary in order to persuade and influence.
Exactly. And my big thing when I do on-site launches, I hang up a thing on the wall: we sell appointments, not cars. But we have to bring the value and the empathy first so that we can earn the right to ask for the appointment. So that's
because invariably you're asking for two things, right? Oh, you're selling the appointment, then you're getting them to show, and then the salespeople are trying to close them on a deal. So it's a lot of ask, and people who are being contacted in that manner, especially if they're getting it in the communication through the BDC is effective and empathetic and clear and concise, and they show, and then all of a sudden the experience they have on the floor is, you want to buy this car, it's all of that empathy is wasted. So it needs to be a seamless transition from one to the other. And until you have good communication between apartments, and this goes for fixed and for the BDC as well, if the clear communication between the two isn't good, you're going to end up with the same result. If you have great empathetic BDC people and trash in the service drive, people aren't going to want to come back. Yeah. Right there, or they'll just drive right through the drive-thru. It's like, hey, drove in. Hey, I'm here. And it's like, hey, you want to buy this $1,000 maintenance package? It's like, no. Out the door they go. Right. Yeah. So communication is everything. And, you know, to bring up data and resources, you know, the thing that we see consistently on the Rentner's Wellness Survey is that technicians want the communication between technicians and service advisors to change and improve. It's the number one thing across the board. It's no longer the average top three. It's now the average top two answer across the board. Now that I'm getting a little more depth of data, it's continuing to be in the top two across the board. They want the communication. They want to feel like they're heard by the service drive. And I'm willing to bet and put money on that if I were to put a survey that included service advisors talking about the BDC or the BDC talking about the service advisors, I bet you dollars to pesos it's going to be exactly the same thing. They want to feel like they're effectively communicated between the two, that they feel heard, right? And if we can be empathetic between departments, we're going to be far more successful and make a whole lot more money.
Yeah. Yeah. And you know what? It's the age-old struggle, whether it's BDC in sales or BDC in service. It's always about perception on the customer end, and they may perceive something we did or said or whatever some completely in a different manner than it was intended, right? So that's mm-hmm. going to cause, and that's going to cause bumps between, you know, maybe the conversation with the BDC and then the in-store visit with and talking to the service advisor or the tech or whatever. And so it's important that the communication is solid and that we're relaying these things back to one another and that feedback is all the way around, like we're all fingers of the same hand that's working together to give mm-hmm. a really strong experience for the customer. And if you've got broken pieces, yeah. And oddly, it's the same thing we experienced then. You know, I think that might be an upcoming question, but you had one about the techs. I vividly remember what it was like with the techs when I was in my early years there.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember going in on Saturdays once a month in part to parts, you know, in my bibs and my tennis shoes or whatever, because we used to always dress up in the office, and to do parts inventory. I mean, it was a family affair. It was so great. But at the same time, there were the techs. It was interesting. Probably mm-hmm. the same dynamic. Those were those that were getting spoon-fed because they were the best, and the service manager didn't want them to leave, and there were the new guys that didn't have a voice yet, and they weren't really happy, but they were afraid to say something because they were going to lose their job. And then there are the middle guys that are okay, but they're still complaining about the OGs getting spoon-fed the good deals, and blah, 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 blah. It's probably the same today, right?
And it's absolutely the nice thing now is that I can start seeing the data from the survey and actually see it in real time, where, you know, when I can have conversations with service managers after the survey and I hand them a report. Obviously it's anonymized and I never give ever, because my reputation is far too important and my word is far too important. Like Tony said, the only thing I have in this world are my balls and my word, and I'm not breaking them from nobody. So it's anonymized for that very reason. So when I can have candid conversations with the service manager afterwards and to be able to say, you know, there's some challenges here that, you know, need to be overcome for you guys to be more successful going forward. Some of them are free, some of them are inexpensive, some of them are expensive. And, you know, budgetary things need to come into play and, you know, coaching needs to come into play. And it's obvious, like in most stores, not all, in most stores, a lot of challenges can be fixed simply by having conversations. And you talk about, you know, the OGs that have been around forever, they're getting spoon-fed. And I would suggest that they're not always the best. And I would suggest most of the time that they're not. They're simply the ones that complain the most. So service managers and service advisors like to spoon-feed them gravy so they shut the hell up. And then you've got the techs who are in fact actually the best in the shop, making way less money than they actually should because the service advisors don't know how to dispatch properly or they don't have a proper dispatch process. So you've got your guys in the middle who are actually top-tier technicians who are probably level 3 and above trained, who are getting 85 to 90% of their work orders are nothing but warranty, so they're not making their time. So at the end of the week, after diagnosing some extraneously difficult, super complicated wiring diagnostic job that's taken them 2 days that they're going to lose their shirt on a diagnostic repair on because it's under warranty in current model. You know, they're not being given that level of, hey, here's 8 hours of gravy for the next 4 hours. Get her done and make your week in a day or kind of deal, because it can happen. You know, you have a good service manager and a good set of advisors who understand what's going on in the shop. They can make sure that those people that can diagnose inside and out are taken care of.
Yep.
And it's a good high-value leader that's going to be able to do that. And like I described earlier on in the week to somebody, actually twice this week, what's a high-value leader or what's an HVL? Well, you have awful bosses You have good leaders, and then you have a high-value leader. High-value leader is empathetic, can communicate, understands the entire business, can communicate clearly, effectively, and succinctly to anyone that he speaks to, whether it's guest or staff alike. So you find a shop that's got a high-value leader, you stick with that high-value leader as much as you possibly can because they're going to provide you the tools, resources, and communication you need to succeed. So you get to that end, and we find out more and more that a lot of these things, especially from the survey, that can be fixed by a good bit of communication. Just have a one-to-one, right? Just have a one-to-one. What do these guys and girls want? What do they want to accomplish? What are their goals and objectives, right? You probably do the same thing with BDMs and BDRs, right?
Yeah, but the important piece here is that sometimes it doesn't get communicated because the person that hears the information in the store doesn't feel like it's important enough to relay it to somebody to make a difference. They're just, I don't know if you understand what I mean. The info never gets to where it needs to be. Like, CSI if you're doing CSI calls. But what if during the experience, like you have a tech or a service advisor or somebody who knows something was off? Maybe it was something BDC said or did or should have known or didn't know, or vice versa. The BDC was witness or heard about something that was missed on that end. We need to share that because if we don't know it's broken, we can't fix it. It's the same as when on the fixed side, on the variable side, when sales managers delete some of our showroom visits because we set appointments with people they can't close because they need work on their credit or whatever, and they don't want their GM to see that they didn't score enough closes on the showroom traffic log, so they delete the visits. Or it's, or they broom them off the lot because the salespeople pre-qualify them and ask them their credit score, and then they say they never showed up for an appointment. So, or the salespeople or techs or service advisors that have a certain number of dials they're supposed to do on the outbound to follow up with customers, and they don't do anything all day, and then they're quick listing all these fictitious dispositions on outbound calls that say no answer, no answer, no answer because they were in a hurry. And we have dirty data. We're getting the data dirty because of the training. We're not training people to adhere to the process for consistency of both process and data, because otherwise it's all messed up.
And you know, I agree. You're going to get dirty data, but not just dirty data. You're going to get poor work ethic, because that's fundamentally what we're talking about. We've got individuals who aren't holding themselves accountable to their actions. People who will scrub a show visit in the showroom because they can't close them for whatever it is that they've pre-qualified. That's a lack of courage, right? That's a lack of work ethic. Instead of owning up to their inability to close and say, hey, I wasn't able to close them for whatever reason, it doesn't matter. I wasn't able to close them. Okay, awesome. What is it that you know about the situation? And if it was a technician, I'm talking a little bit outside of my purview here because I'm really not great at sales. But what I do understand is how to coach a little bit on the sales side, because the same basic stuff can apply to technicians. Okay, awesome. You didn't make a sale. Okay, talk me through the whole process. What happened? They said this and they said that. Okay, write it down. Write down every step. Every step you can think of, write it down. Write it down for me, and well, let's walk through it step by step by step. What did you say? How did you say it? What are the words that you used? What is the cadence you used? Okay, awesome. We've come across this point before. How come you didn't use this style of phraseology that we talked about 3 weeks ago? Oh, I can use that there? Yes, you can. Okay, step, 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 step. Okay, this is something new. This is not something the kind of objection we've ever talked about before. What do we need to do in order to help you understand that this phrase that the customer has said is something that you can overcome with this objection handling device? right? Walk it through. A person who is incapable of holding themselves accountable to their own actions is a person that you probably shouldn't keep around the store, period. You end up with dirty data, poor customer experiences, and bad CSI. And it doesn't matter what's the front of the house or the back of the house. If you have somebody who is unable to hold themselves accountable, you're going to have a bad relationship with the customer, period.
Exactly. And take declined repairs. I mean, what you just said applies to sales and service, your role play. Whatever you didn't close, you role play it, you figure out how to do it different next time. Let's take declined repairs. Perfect example. The tech knows that the vehicle needs something, but they're declining the repairs. Why did they decline them? You even need to role play that to see if it was a financial issue and they weren't aware they can get it financed or whatever it was. But then the more important part is you have to admit it, and then you have to make sure that information gets to the BDC so that we can follow up and be proactive and, you know, reach out to them again and make sure that it's not something that they expect later when we call them for an LOF campaign and they schedule an oil change, that they're going to come back in because there was a disconnect and we don't know there were declined repairs. And they come in for the LOF and they're like, oh yeah, remember those repairs I said I didn't want you to do last time? Yeah, go ahead, you can do them today. Well, you don't have the parts. You don't have the parts in stock. So that's how bad CSI starts. Because all this stuff are little tiny tweaks where if we communicate with one another inside the store to tweak whatever doesn't go optimally, then we figure out the solutions.
It's just conversation. It's just conversation. Let's have a conversation, right? So that leads that leads fairly well into the last question here is beyond conversation. What would you say over your time in the automotive industry, with all that you've experienced and the departments and the people and the processes and the dealerships, what would you say would be one piece of advice that you would give a mechanic to be happier, healthier, more productive tomorrow?
Be true to you. The same as I tell anybody about anything when they're searching for what's right and how to make the right decisions. You know, whether that means, you know, if you're spiritual or not spiritual and you have to ask for clarity or whatever you need, what I'm saying is don't shortchange yourself. Don't ever think that you're any less than anybody else because we're all equal. We simply have different sets of experiences or training or this or that or the other. That they need to be true to themselves and they need to see. Like me, you know, I had so many people when I was young. Oh, you're so smart, you should do this. Oh, you're good with numbers, do that. Oh, my dad used to have me perform on demand. Like he'd go when I was in junior high school, Wendy, what's 12 plus 8 minus 3 times 2 plus 5? And boom, I'd give him an answer and he'd throw a quarter at me. Woof, woof. You know, that's looking back, that's what it felt like. I was performing, you know. And he gave me a Scooby snack for getting the answer right. So I think don't compromise yourself. I think be proud of yourself. Know who you are. A lot of it is inner pride and inner, be strong, be true to you. And I don't know. That's it. Let them talk, I guess. Let them talk. My mother-in-law, years ago in Greek, she used to, when the little old Greek ladies were gossiping about me because I was this young 20-something-year-old Americanita on the streets walking and they're all, you know, it's just a curious nature. And she'd say, astus na lene more, astus na lene. Let them talk. So I'd say be true to you and let them talk.
Good advice. Be true to you. And just let them talk. And I think from my perspective, I think Russell Wickham said it best, is mind your bay. And I think that is quite effectively just another way to say mind your bay, because somebody's going to do what they're going to do. Your bay mates, the people down the aisle on the other side of the shop, they're going to do what they're going to do. They're going to say what they're going to say. Don't worry about what they're going to say. Don't worry about anything else. Worry about you. Make sure you're straight, right? Make sure you can take care of you and you use your own morals, your own ethics, your own guidelines, your own compass to make sure you do you. I think that's just another way to phrase it, and I love it because it comes back full circle. So that's awesome advice, Wendy. I really appreciate it. Wendy, I really appreciate you tonight. Thank you for taking some time out of your day and giving us a little slice into the experience that you've had in this industry.
It's been fun. I appreciate it.
Awesome. Folks, I think that's the end of today's Wrench Turners podcast. That's okay, though. It's no longer, oh no, because there will be another episode coming next week. I've also got a special coming up. Wendy's episode here will be coming out before the series starts. We've got a recruitment series coming. I have on tap now, I have booked six. I might book a few more, but I have six recruiters in around the trade, whether they're from automotive specifically or the trades as a whole, folks that recruit, hire, and transition into different dealerships, different brands, so on and so forth, technicians, to give you guys a kind of inner look as to what it's like being recruited, what it's like through the process, so that you guys can be a little bit less anxious about when you get a call from a headhunter, as it were. So watch out for that. It's coming out in June and July of 24. Don't forget, we've got the Wrench Turners Wellness Survey. If you are interested in finding out a little bit more of that, we touched on that at this episode. Please reach out to me. You can find me on LinkedIn. Wrenches for Wrenches. We got a new newsletter coming out this week. And like my mama keeps saying, the merch is comfortable. Make sure you check out the link below. Link below here in YouTube and on Spotify for Wrench Turners merch. I appreciate you very much. And as we end the episode, like we always do, a little bit of quote to end the episode. I found this one. I don't know how to pronounce the name of this individual, but I'm going to say the quote anyway. So, life is given to us. We earn it by giving it back. Thank you, folks. Remember that negative pushes, positive pulls, and always clean your toys before you put them away.